Okay, today is the Sunday, the 12th day of September, 2021. And we are going to start our study of chapter 6 in the Acts of the Three Nephites in the sealed Book of Mormon. And
It's at the end.
I was back in the Book of Moses, chapter 6. Yes, now I'm there, chapter 6.
Okay.
So, is there anything before we start reading?
No, I just love you all.
Okay. Who would... Well, let's just read. It's short, but let's just read first. I'm just going to call on people as I see the pictures. Steve, would you just read verse 1 for us?
I'll be glad to. This is how Jesus told us while he was among us. If you obey my commandments strictly and keep my covenants, you will be my special property among all the peoples of the earth, and you yourselves will become a kingdom of priests and a holy nation.
Okay. So usually we just read it, and then I just ask for comments or questions from anybody. So any comments on that?
It's just really simple and beautiful. And I like how it says, if you obey my commandments strictly.
Strictly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And keep my commandments, and you will be my special property. Like, I've never heard it said that way before, that right. We become his, we become his property.
He owns us.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So one thing I think we need to, it's not super clear, but I think chapter 6 starts, I think Jonas is quoting Nephi here. So I think at least the first few verses, I forget when it ends. It goes all the way through 19. I believe this is Nephi speaking.
Thank you. I have a note in my book where I say that he's quoting Jesus, and I say where it ends. And I don't see that right now.
I don't know if it's Jesus, but I think it's Nephi talking, starting in verse 1, because in verse 2, he says his name. Anyways.
Okay, let's go on. Lisa, would you go on and read verse 2 for us?
Okay. As part of his covenant with Abraham, that all the nations of the earth shall be blessed by means of a chosen seed, he, Jesus, being the promised descendant, kept this same promise among the children of Lehi, placing upon me, Nephi, the presidency of the high priesthood of his church, and to my descendants after me, from generation to generation, as regards that of his administration here in the land of our inheritance. In parallels with the administration of the Church of Jesus Christ in the land of Jerusalem, for how much I and my descendants, according to the diligence that we show for the gospel of Christ, will be channels of revelation for the church in this land of promise, since we have no contact with him who holds the keys of the kingdom laid upon his head by the hands of Jesus Christ, when he ministered among the Jews in the land of our ancestors.
Okay, so yes, it does say it's Nephi. Thank you for that clarification. All right, comments on this verse, please.
I think the promise, the first verse is like a promise, telling us if we do what we do, what we're supposed to do, then Jesus will do what he's supposed to do. We've heard this so many times. It's wonderful to hear it again. And then Nephi almost, he talks about how important it was that the church be the same, and that they understood that part. They understood that what was taught in Jerusalem was going to also be taught in the promised land, and that he even said channels of revelation. I feel like that's what we're doing too. And that he laid upon his hands ahead by the hands of Jesus. for both the Jews and for the people in the promised land. And now we know how much Mauricio is doing also. It's the intertwining of the decades and the time frames and the different cultures of how the Lord is keeping us all together in the same plan going forward.
Thank you. So I've got a comment. So again, there's several Nephites, you know, floating around. So just to verify what I'm understanding of which Nephi this is Nephi, the father of Jonah, who's writing this. Because he says that Jesus placed his hands upon him. That's when Jesus came. He called Nephi to be the head of the 12 and the presidency of the high priesthood. And then notice this, it says, and to my descendants after me. Now, we've had long discussions before, and this is something for both Bob and Suzanne, who are, well, they're not new in the class, he's new in the class, but we've discussed before, which is the LDS church had totally ignored, but our LDS church made a huge point of, and that is ideally the presidency is supposed to go down linearly, descendants. The prophet after Joseph Smith was supposed to be Joseph Smith III. Mm-hmm. And that's just dropped out of the LDS history books. Mm-hmm. They say, oh, there was all confusion and nobody knew who it was supposed to be. But the RLDS people did know, and he became the head of the RLDS church and for something he served till 1914. It's the same as his cousin Joseph F. Smith was head of the LDS church, who's also a lineal descendant of the chosen. It's really Joseph Smith's father they were supposed to be descendants of. Anyway, moving on, he talks about my descendants after me. And when you read, there's the opening of, it's either the Book of Mormon or Moroni. I think it's Book of Mormon within the Book of Mormon. He makes a point of saying he's a direct descendant of Nephi. Because remember, they had moved together and Lamanites had come in and mixed together. And he makes a point that, and I believe that's what he was saying, a lineal descendant having the right, therefore, they have the right of first refusal. If they turn out not to be righteous, then they can be replaced by somebody else. But if they're righteous, they inherit that. Very much like in the Aaronic priesthood, it can be inherited through the literal descendants of Aaron.
I'll make a couple comments.
Yes, Russell.
First of all, verse 20 says that these were the words of my father, Nephi. So Jonas is writing this. And so, yeah, that specifies what the Nephi is. But I wanted to comment on the RLDS. You know, as I looked at the history, I always thought it was crazy that they'd have this stake president and someone else to organize and set apart Joseph Smith III to be the president. But in reality, the Doctrine and Covenants specifies the stakes are where the things are at. The 12, the apostles, they're supposed to be for the missionary work. And we get so mixed up that, oh, no, the 12 are the top. No, they're really not. The stakes are the top. And so the RLDS actually did it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also when it came to polygamy, they did it right, too.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the big reasons they left. They knew. Mm-hmm. That's another story for another day. But they knew that it was wrong. And that was probably the biggest reason. So. Okay. Good point.
So it's talking about the lineal and the line of authority, father to son, and he says like two times, or at least once, in parallels with the administration of the Church of Christ in the land of Jerusalem. So where is the lineal, when we talk about the lineal priesthood that happened with Christ and the apostles? Do you know any more about that?
Yes, I have just read a whole book on that.
Oh, cool. Imagine that.
Thank you, Lisa.
That was has to do with the talk I gave last week. It's the top article on my website right now, top mini, most recent, is about the Gospel of James. And there's a group who are translating We've all been taught that the New Testament was first written in Greek. Mm-hmm. Why have we been taught that? Because that's what we have. Mm-hmm. There's no real source in that. Well, it's going to turn out, I believe, that the New Testament was first written in Hebrew. And what happens is Paul is such an amazing missionary in Europe, where Greek is the language, that the Greek church grew faster and overpowered the church in Jerusalem. And they became the official ones with the official versions. And when we read the New Testament, they just say all these names, you know, Cleopas was walking, you know, with Jesus after the resurrection. Who's Cleopas? You know, and they talk about these women, Salome, and that they had never mentioned before, and they just sort of expect us to know who these people are. But what this book pointed out was a lot of those, they're an awful lot of the early members are all descendants of the chosen seed. They don't even pick up that it's the lineal. They don't know that part. This is not written by LDS at all. This is the Christians trying to get the New Testament right. So they don't know a lot about this, but they do make the point that several of the disciples are cousins related to Joseph Smith. We know John the Baptist. Oh, we find out what that relationship is, that his mother Mary, her aunt is Aunt Elizabeth. And it says a relative or a cousin, it says in the New Testament. Anyway, John the Baptist is related. The one who led the church, here's the big one, James, the brother of Christ. He becomes the head of the church in Jerusalem. The 12 apostles are told to go out into all the world and preach, and they do. India, when you read all where they went, they covered all over. So who's the head of the church in Jerusalem? It's Jesus, the brother, called the brother of Christ, but the actual relationship is, James, the brother of Christ. He is the son of Joseph from an earlier marriage before he married Mary. And see, remember how I just said it's not just Joseph Smith, it's from Joseph Smith's father that is the descendancy. Well, it's also the father. And so James, the brother of Christ, is from the chosen line. And that genealogy in both Matthew and Luke is chosen line, straight down from David and the ones it needs to be. So anyway, there's an example right there. I don't want to go too far on that. But so James
awesome.
Is,
Thank
and
you.
The one who replaced James when he is martyred in AD 64 is Simeon. Anyway, they do continue that. So they did try to do that to some extent.
I was wondering who holds the presidency of the high priesthood now in the church.
Mauricio.
That's Mauricio.
The okay. presidency of the high priesthood is the same as we call the president of the church. Okay. And this is tricky, but the one who had the right of first, I'm not sure if that was how it was set up. This is still not totally clear in my mind. But Joseph Frederick Smith is the great grandson of Joseph Smith Jr. And he had the right of first refusal, probably to be the head of the church and also the head of the priesthood. The priesthood is outside of the church and in the church. It's outside and it can be used to start the church. This is a tricky subject, but he was called to, not only he was ordained to be the president of the high, for president of the high priesthood, right now, I believe it still is Joseph Frederick Smith.
Okay.
And then he was supposed to start the church in Missouri, and that didn't work out. And then he has abdicated his connection to Mauricio, who ordained him. And so Mauricio now is the president of the church. So I don't know all the nuances exactly, but it has something to do with right of first refusal. And that's why so much was made of Joseph Frederick Smith being ordained. Russell, what are you thinking?
I want to mention about the time that Joseph Frederick Smith was ordained. In the RLDS or in the temple lot, they are really opposed to the idea of high priests. And so he went to Jerusalem, he went down to Brazil to get ordained and everything, but he just was having a hard time with this concept of high priest. And they talked to him, and Mauricio talked to him, and others talked to him. And so he was kind of reconciled, and he was sitting there ready to be ordained. And he finally said to himself, I'm not going to do this. And so he put his hands on the chair, getting ready to get up and get out of the chair. And the Lord talked to him and says, if you don't do this, I won't be able to move things forward. I wish I had the right words.
But anyway. It was, if you don't do this, you'll destroy. The word destroy was in there. You'll destroy my plans for the church or something very close to that.
Yeah. So he sat down and got ordained.
So I'll just fill in a little more on what Russell said. The Temple Lot Church, where he is from, had the teaching that there are no high priests, that Sidney Rigdon made that doctrine up and talked Joseph Smith into it. And so he was convinced there all his life that there were supposed to be no high priests in the church. And, you know, Alma 13 talks about they had high priests, and those are real high priests. But they over there, they say, well, that's really like high priest and the Aaronic priesthood, and they don't accept that. So it was a huge deal for a man who doesn't believe in high priest to be the one that had the right to be ordained. By the way, it's not just any descendant. They have to be worthy and chosen by the Lord. And then they have to accept it. And so he did accept it for a while, and then he rejected it. So, okay, we get a lot out of one verse here.
Yeah.
So
I have a question then.
Please.
So if the RLDS didn't believe in the high priest.
No, the temple lot don't believe in high priest.
Oh, the temple lot. Okay. So that's like a disconnect from what the church is supposed to have. And then coming out here, Brigham brought everybody out here, and this church has a false understanding of the high priesthood, the high priesthood. So was it that the high priesthood is nowhere, and that's why Mauricio in the sealed book, and they talk about the greater part of the high priesthood is still to come back to
us? Yes. What happened, and I've got papers on this, and we have, it's been mentioned at least a couple times, but Brigham Young purged. Brigham Young was only an apostle, which is the same level as an elder in the church. DNC 20, verse 38 says, you know, an apostle is an elder. That's right. And so he was never ordained to be a high priest. So
the whole time?
The whole time, never.
Wow.
And then he finally finds himself. And then they elected the Quorum of the 12 to continue on. The election at the death, martyrdom of Joseph and Hiram, the election on the 8th of August, 1844, was about who would be guardian of the church until Joseph Smith III grew up. And we're taught in the LDS church that's what Sidney Rigdon said. But when we're taught Brigham Young's talk, he's saying that they had all the keys needed to do it, and they would be the guardians until Joseph Smith III grew up. And they always drop out that part about until. And it was only three, let me just finish this thought. It was 3 years later, December 1847, where Brigham Young decided that he should be the president, and he convinced enough of the quorum to get a majority to vote him in. So the 12, anyway, he becomes president, never having even been a high priest. Before that time, immediately after he was, in September of 1844, immediately after the martyrdom, Brigham Young systematically purged the whole church of high priests. In one day, he ordained, as I understand it, 400 high priests to be 70s. The job of a 70 is another kind of elder, and their job is to help the apostles. And so they sort of thought they were moving up, but they weren't. They were all being demoted to be helpers to apostles. The apostles are supposed to be out in all the world. Oh, and that was how Brigham Young convinced everybody to be president. He said, look, if you put the three of us as presidency, then the rest of you can go out in all the world. And we don't all have 12 have to be in Salt Lake. That was a good convincing argument. And so let's leave that at that. But he actually, so the answer is basically, since his time, almost no real high priest in the LDS Church. And Russell Nelson, in I think it was spring of 2018, kind of formally acknowledged that and put all the high priests back into the elders' quorum. And so I don't want to drag that out too much, but that's okay. The answer. There were no high priests, and so it did have to be restored. And
so this is why when I have talked to several of my friends who are so very, very strong in the church, they don't get the understanding of the difference between the high priests that they think they have now and the higher order of the high priest.
The real high priest.
Yes, and believe so strongly. And so sometimes if you try to talk to them about a different part of the Melchizedek priesthood, they don't, you know, you're just dumb. You don't know what's going on. And in reality, they've not a clue either.
Yeah, the reality is they don't, generally people don't really take the time to believe, to study
it out.
Because everybody's caught up in, you know, the show of everything, and people's lives are so busy. I mean, people have got soccer and, you know, dance lessons and piano, and, you know, we've got BYU so distracted. Games. Yes, mm-hmm. BYU games. And actually, Alan Pratt was my state president in Florida, and I remember at a state conference once, he got up there and he said, you know, what is really going to happen when, you know, when we meet the Lord, and all we can tell them about is like all of our soccer games, you know, and all the football games that we watched, and all, you know, like
President Hinckley said the same thing.
Yeah. It's like, we, you know, people are so distracted with the world that they don't take the time to think about any of these things. And so when you bring something up, it rocks their world. And they're like, wait, no. Cause I have a checkbox and I have the 90 days to read with President Nielsen, where I reread, you know, the conference talks again. And that's what I can do because it's easy and it's right there and I check it off. You know?
Yeah.
And so they don't want to disrupt their world.
In the Jewish people don't, I'll just finish quick. I didn't see their hand. By the way, I can't always see everybody's hand, so you can just speak up. But
I just want to comment on the special property in verse 1, because in verse 2 it says, it runs administration of the Church of Christ, but it's also here according to the diligence. That's why Suzanne brought it up. I felt it again. We really love the scriptures, really seek the Lord with all diligence. You know, the middle two words of Moses are that he was diligent, you know, and I think if we really love, then we can make our callings high, because they have the special promise with the land of promise. So his special property points to the Americas, you know. So it will have a special, if we are diligent, and also his generations after him. But I thought it was interesting because of this special tools God uses through different people, and that we really understand that we can become his people in a special property, and also how he must look forward to this few hundred years there, that there was a kind of an Enochian society, you know, because in Jerusalem it was faster downfall in a way than in America. So I thought that was interesting. because of the land of promise, the promise of the brother of Jared.
Thank you. So.
Yesterday, before the baptism, I actually sang a song, and there's a line in the song that I love, and it says, it's talking about God, and it says, "You make righteous those who seek." And it's just so beautiful and simple. Like, those who are seeking, he's going to reveal his mysteries, and he's gonna make us righteous because we're seeking, and then we become his property. But if we're not doing that, then it's not going to happen, and we're gonna be dead, you know, spiritually dead.
Right.
So I love that line.
Yeah, it was beautiful song and lyrics, and it was great. Okay.
Let's read three and four.
Jim, are you where? You can read verse 3 and 4 for us.
Sure, I'd be glad to. The basis of this promise that extended over the firstborn of this seed, it is superimposed upon the head of a righteous descendant from the line of Nephi. If the firstborn has not the desire to fill this office in the place of his father, or is not worthy of such, being that I, Nephi myself, with whom Christ made this covenant, I tell you with all the strength of my heart that we, the Nephites, can become, yea, this special property of Jesus Christ, for Jesus Christ, among all other peoples from the earth, and become a kingdom of priests and a holy nation.
Thank you. And I had forgotten that the next verse explained what I was reading into that one little sentence. He spells it out. So thank you very much. Comments, please, on those two verses. He points out it's to the firstborn of the seed. And see, just really quick, in the days of Joseph Smith, it would have gone to Hiram after Joseph. It's from Joseph Smith Sr. is the one. So Hiram Smith was set up to be the president of the church after Joseph, but he was martyred, of course. It then would have gone, following this, the next real one would have been Joseph Smith III, but Samuel, the next in line, would have been the next. He was the indicated one to be the guardian then until Joseph III from the sea. And he dies just a month after under sort of questionable circumstances, is all we need to say. And then his brother is William. And he had I'm just saying they were going down the list from the firstborn. And this makes a point of it starts with the firstborn. But if he doesn't have the desire, then, or if he's not worthy, it's exactly, I didn't need to say all that last time. Other comments?
So what happened with William?
William, we might call Wild William, but that's just my appellation, knew that there was a problem with Brigham Young. He knew about the polygamy. He was against that polygamy is another whole story, but this is really kind of polygamists against non-polygamists. And he knew that Brigham was in. Nobody had ever thought of him as actually being in charge. He was an apostle. And he got called to be the patriarch by Brigham Young because he's in the patriarchal line too. See, it's both lines. There's two different ones. One is there's two parts. There's a checks and balances. There's a quorum of one, which is the presiding patriarch. And his name is supposed to be read first in the sustaining of the general authorities at annual conference, as shown in section 124 of the Doctrine and Covenants. They give you the order to read them in. He's like a quorum of one and technically the highest office in the church. Then there's a quorum of three, the first presidency, then a quorum of 12, then a quorum of 70. And if all the others are unanimous, they're equal in authority, only if they're unanimous. It says that in the section 107, in 124. Why am I telling you that? Because there's a checks and balances where the patriarch, in all of those, there's some checks and balances. So William is called in to be the patriarch to the apostles, and he published in the New York Times that his life was, he knew what a patriarch was, mm-hmm. and he knew what his authority was supposed to be. And when he pointed that out to Brigham Young, he said his life had actually was actually threatened, and he got out. And the reorganized church, he went with the Strangites for a while. The organized church didn't start until 1860, quite a bit later. And then he joins the reorganized church. I forgot what the question was, but hopefully that was the answer.
I asked what happened with William.
There you go.
I've heard about all the other brothers, and I knew about Samuel, but I didn't know much about William.
And William went from, I'll tell you more later. Okay. It's beyond the other comments on these two verses, which seem really pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, I'm trying to, apply the scriptures on myself, on ourselves. And then I'm thinking about the Nephites, which was made of out of the Jacobites, the Josephites, and the Zoramites, three tribes. Right. And I think because the LDS Church doesn't want the name Mormon, I would love for us to be called Mormons. And then we are also made up of different tribes, we're from the Dutch tribe and the American tribe. And so it's interesting to think about, who are all Mormons,
Right, and it's so true. And actually, when you study, and I'm not an expert on this, but I have studied it enough to know that I'm not an expert on it. But the different countries in Europe are somehow connected very closely to the tribes of Israel. They have the same names, Denmark, Dan, and the Goths of Gad, and et cetera. And so in a sense, in the European part, they're actually, I believe, tribes of Israel. And see, and they've been, the original nations were all families and tribes. And so they're intermarrying within the nation is intermarrying within the tribe, kind of. And so it's been kept surprisingly pure in a lot of places.
I have a comment on verse 4. I just love what Nephi has said here. He's like, I tell you with all the strength of my heart, his belief, you can just feel it coming through the pages, all the strength of his heart, every fiber of his being. He is telling us that we can become this special property. And then he goes on to say, it's a special property that Jesus has picked from all the peoples of the earth. So not everybody is going to be in this group. Mm-hmm. It's just to become a kingdom, that means we'll be in the celestial kingdom. If we do the thing diligently and fulfill the promise, then that's our reward. And it's just kind of put out there very specifically.
And I will add to that just a little thought that in the Book of Mormon, it talks about God is no respecter of person, mm-hmm. black or white, male or female, slave or free. Mm-hmm. And in, and this is partly for Bob, who's new here, Joseph Smith III had many wonderful revelations from the Lord, which are in the RLDS Doctrine and Covenants. And right at the end of the Civil War, 1865, the church started in 1860. Civil War ends 1865, and they want to know if they should ordain blacks to the priesthood, because Brigham Young had been totally against that, and there was a question. And the Lord gave this very short, very clear revelation that the priesthood is open to all men, and that he purposely put some of his chosen leaders in each of the nations. He has planted in every nation some chosen people who are supposed to help lead that nation and bring them to the truth. And so they had this, so they could give the blacks the priesthood way back then. And look at all the pain.
Yeah.
And I was in Brazil on a mission where so many people have one black ancestor, just, great grandpa. And because there was no prejudice down there. Everybody married everybody. And it was so painful to baptize someone and then find a picture in the, we had to go through the, before they ordained to the priesthood, we had to go through their family albums. And all that pain, and not till 1978, all of the civil rights stuff was in the 60s. And the LDS Church finally in 1978.
They caved because of
that. And all, to all practical appearances, they caved into the pressure. But when you actually read what President Kimball said, he didn't actually get a revelation. He prayed and said, Lord, I feel good about doing this, and unless you stop me, I'm going to go ahead, and nothing stopped me. So they finally came around, but it just shows if we had actually had who was supposed to be the real prophet, just look at all the pain that would have solved.
Yeah, and that was in
1865. I have an article on the revelations of Joseph Smith III on my website.
Okay.
So I quote it there. And there's lots of good ones. Well, they came from the Lord.
I have many friends, well, that left the church in their mid-20s. And a lot of them left because of polygamy and also because of the Black issue. You know, I mean, this is a horrible thing, horrible, embarrassing, like just ridiculous thing.
Let's read one more verse and then let's close. So we try to get at least 5 verses in. And so we did Jim. So I'm not sure. Actually, let's do you. You haven't done one yet.
Okay, sure.
Would you read verse five, please?
Okay. Now, therefore, all of you, O people of the Church of Christ, that Melchizedek was king and priest at the same time with the office to the high priesthood equal to Enoch. And now we have the same designation left over Nephi's head and extended to every Nephite nation with the opportunity to produce a kingdom of priests and thus to promote a real priesthood among the people of the earth. Wow.
Read verse 6 too. It's really short.
But this condition depends on strictly obeying the commandments of Christ and indeed keeping his covenants. There we go.
So that goes with it because the Jews tell Jesus, well, we're descendants of Abraham. See, they don't need it. The real descendants of Aaron don't feel they need to be ordained to anything. They inherited it. So they're telling Jesus, you know, we're born with all of this. And Jesus makes this point. He said, God can raise up out of these stones, you know, descendants. But anyway, they have the right of first refusal. It's the same idea. You have to be strictly obeying the commandments. Mm-hmm. But I'm just going to comment first. What I noticed is he talks about different nations of the Nephites. Now, that's interesting. I mean, they had nations back then. They had the Nephites and Zoramites, Josephites, and Jacobites. But today, there's Indian nations. The Hopi are a nation of Nephites, I believe. Anyway, I shouldn't jump in. Other comments, and then we'll close for the
day. He's so enthusiastic. I love the enthusiasm here. Equal, a high priesthood equal to Enoch. And what an opportunity we have, you know, for a kingdom of priests. Even among every Nephite nation, the opportunity, he's so enthusiastic for the first time to have this high priesthood, I think, you know, which directly comes from Jesus himself.
The opportunity to produce a kingdom of priests, like, so imagine this, you know, kingdom, right?
See, we're supposed to make the New Jerusalem in Missouri is supposed to be equal to the city of Enoch. So when the city of Enoch comes down, we or whoever makes it there will be living the same kind of united order, the same kind of laws, we'll have been through the same kind of trials, we'll have a lot in common. They can come down and we'll hug each other's necks because it's like, I think they're observing us and cheering for us. And anyway, but we'll be kind of equals. Yes,
right.
And as opposed to, wow, amazing people that we could never be like.
We have to be like Enoch.
Yeah, or we won't be there.
Yeah.
Somebody will be there.
We have to become his property.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we need to promote.
Yeah, right. To promote.
Promote.
Promote the royal priesthood among all the peoples.
Right.
Have you shared with them?
Yes.
Okay. This is great. And the little cards too.
Right. She just got her little cards from Jeannie and the handouts from me. And so she's, she's ready to promote.
Yeah. I'm a good promoter.
She's a promoter.
So if we get Bob's address, we can send some to you.
I know. Well, excuse me. What? I'm sorry.
I'm just saying if we get Bob's Robert's address, we can send some of these things to him.
Okay.
We have to get more of the cards.
Right. Email.
John, I have a question for you. About my wife. Okay. I'll summarize real quick. She had her first stroke on August 12th, 2012. She died on August 12th, 2020 to the very day. I still believe there's something. I'm gonna send you the particulars and my address. I'll send it to John.
Okay, and then I'll bring it to them. And tell me, if you can, the time of day, because that's real important. There's four times of day for different calendars.
Okay.
Just to the quarter day accuracy is fine. Thank you. You bet. I'll do that. Okay.
So this chapter is leading us up to chapter 7. And in chapter 6, we're learning a lot about becoming, going forward. And chapter 7 is going to start to tell us how we're doing that. And Mauricio touched a little bit on this. So as we're reading forward and getting ready for next week, just realize that I love that part. It says opportunity to produce and to promote. That's where we are at. And we're in this opportunity for ourselves, but promoting it for others. So to be able to bring the next step. And we have to get to that next step in a spiritual manner before we're going to do the physical things. And that's what we're learning from these Nephites.
I have a quick question for somebody out there. Okay. I have always been a missionary.
Yes.
I was for 10 years, I was a state mission president. Well, I was a state mission president. I was a full-time missionary. I mean, I missionary work is my calling. I mean, that's my major calling in life. One of the things we need, the tools, is the book. I need about 200 copies of the printed book.
Steve, can you tell us about that? Steve, turn your mic on. We're so excited.
Steve, go to sleep.
I got it working now. I've been asking the same question pretty frequently, and they're printing books. They've got the printing machines up and working down there, and they're printing, I think, the last bunch. John, correct me if I'm wrong, but they were working on the Portuguese version. There was talk of getting the Spanish and getting some more English.
I've got a little more news since then. On our announcement part of this, we should have announced, which is not recorded, but there's a conference in November. They traditionally have the conference in November. I'm not even sure why. And there's going to be copies available there. Bob, remind me, you said where you're located.
South Carolina.
No, Georgia.
Georgia.
Not Georgia.
Okay, so you're in Georgia.
Let me work on that.
Steve will bring you back a big pile.
Yeah.
He better. I'm going to have that.
Yeah. He'll bring you back a big pile of these things, because I'm going to bring back some to me, but I'm in, you know, Utah.
So
I've got, I'm going to tell you, out in the sticks in South Georgia, there's a lot of really good people here. And the last 2 years, all this, they're looking for truth. They're looking for light. And this book has it. And I want to give it to them.
Awesome.
Amen.
Wow. Yeah. I'm glad you're on board. That's awesome. Yeah. That's
so
great.
So basically there's this copy, right? And then the PDF file, right?
No, but in November, there'll be one with a black cover and spiral bound and printed in Brazil. By the way, this book was printed in Missouri, and it's a fulfillment of the prophecy. The law will go forth from Zion, the word from Jerusalem, and the law from Jerusalem. both the Portuguese and the English versions were specifically printed in Zion to fulfill that prophecy of Isaiah, that that's where the word would go forth, the law would go forth from. Okay, we're going to close this session. Usually we have a little time after. Oh, I'm not going to try to close it with my phone.
So I'm just going to stop the recording. No, don't anybody go anywhere. All right.